You're listening to the Triangle Radio Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the Holiday 2018/2019 issue of Vanity Fair magazine. This is Vanity Fair Part B. I was one of those kids where everyone wonders, what's Julia gonna do? Said Julia Garner, 24, and she stars in Dirty John, the TV adaptation of the hit podcast. The opening photograph of her is by Dan Martinson, styled by Samira Nasser. This is Vanity Fair's opening act. Vanity Fair's Krista Smith speaks with Julia Garner, the Ozark and Maniac actress who stars in a new Bravo series based on a true crime podcast. The Dirty John podcast, a thriller about a real-life scammer, became a phenomenon. Were you a fan before you landed a role in the TV adaptation? I heard they were making it into a series, so I listened to the whole thing in one day and did not stop. I'd never heard anything like it before. The series script is amazing, and Connie Britton and Eric Bana were attached, so it was a no-brainer for me. I play Tara, the daughter of the woman marrying Dirty John, who does not trust him. The ending is so crazy, which I don't want to give away, but it has to do with Tara and John. That's all I can say. Audiences have come to adore you as the rebellious Ruth Langmore in Ozark on Netflix. What have the past two seasons been like? Collaborating with actors like Jason Bateman and Laura Linney, I learned early on that they just do the work. It's about being willing to feel uncomfortable at times. I'm not comfortable playing Ruth. It's not an easy mindset to be in for 7 months, crying in a corner, but that is the job. And is acting the job you've always wanted? I didn't know it was a profession when I was a kid. All you see is a red carpet and the Oscars. You don't know how people got there. But it's not surprising that I ended up doing this, because I grew up going to the theater, and I was always so curious what the actors were doing backstage. Wow, I'd think. I wonder if they are like that in real life. I still haven't tried theater, though. I want to. Why did you start with film and TV? When I was a kid, I was obsessed with Turner Classic Movies. I remember loving All About Eve, because it was the first time I saw Bette Davis. And later, I became really passionate about films from the 70s, which is the best era of cinema, I think. You made your film debut at 17 as a cult member in Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene, the 2011 film that was a favorite at the Sundance Film Festival. At 15, I got picked up off the street in New York to audition for a TV show. It was an open call of 1,500 people, and it was down to me and another girl. I didn't get it, and I was devastated. But a few months later, that same casting director cast me in Martha. I didn't know how film shoots worked, and I didn't know what Sundance was. I had to ask my teachers if I could take a few days off, and they asked, "Where are you going?" I said, "I don't know, it's this festival thing in Utah." How do your parents feel about you being an actress? I think when I started, they were surprised. I was one of those kids where everyone wonders, what's Julia going to do? But my mom was on the Israeli Saturday Night Live 40 years ago. She's a therapist now, but she knew how hard it is to have a career as an actor. What's next? I want to try every sort of character that there is, because that's learning something new. And then you have that role checked off in a way. So, I'm open to anything. What Julia loves? Style icons. Audrey Hepburn. Carolyn Bessette Kennedy. Diane Keaton. Shoes. By far mules with a kitten heel. Sneaker. Adidas Gazelle. accessory, sunglasses, but they have to go with the outfit. Jeans, page, or APC. Products you can't live without. Biologique Recherchère Lotion P50, Boy Brow by Glossier. Necessary extravagance, a facial every 6 weeks. Musicians at your dream dinner party. Nina Simone, Renee Fleming, and Robert Johnson. But he can't bring the devil as his plus one. for Pod's sake. As Hollywood listens in, the chorus of Podcast continues to crescendo. Here, Leon Nefek, the host of Slate's Slow Burn podcast, which delves into the untold stories behind Watergate and the Clinton impeachment, recommends his must-listens. The Pope's Long Con. The jaw-dropping story of con man Danny Ray Johnson, who ran for state office in Kentucky in 2016 on a campaign of lies about his past, and won. With its tragic, shocking conclusion, this show is a reminder that there will be more Trumps after Trump, and is a bracing example of the impact that honest reporting can have on dishonest subjects. Decoder Ring, hosted by Slate's TV critic Willa Paskin, this podcast cracks cultural mysteries. Who tries out for reality television? Who picks the paintings that hang in hotel rooms? Where did the laugh track come from, and why did it die? Listening to this show is like staring at a magic eye image. The stories reveal their profundity, gradually, sneakily. Bodega Boys, profane, irreverent commentary on culture and politics, delivered by two funny friends with anarchic brains. Desus Nice and the Kid Mero have been podcasting since 2013, and they possess a staggering amount of detailed knowledge about the world and a seemingly infinite ability to turn it all into jokes. Now on to music. All the stars, from standout soundtracks to musicians who made waves, Lisa Robinson charts the year's highlights in music. Movie music. Black Panther. There hasn't been a soundtrack in a long time that was a real soundtrack and not just put together. Kendrick Lamar told me about the music he created and produced for the superhero smash Black Panther. The Pulitzer Prize-winning rapper added, "Before recording, I had only seen the ideas, concept, and a 2-minute clip. I loved it. By the time we were done, we felt the music had its own identity." Don't be surprised if Lamar and his label mate SZA perform the movie's lead single, All the Stars, at the Oscars. Mid-90s. Oscar-winning composers Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, The Social Network, contributed songs to Jonah Hill's directorial debut, Mid-90s. The film also features fabulous mid-90s music, including songs from Bad Brains, A Tribe Called Quest, The Pixies, Misfits, and Cypress Hill. A Star is Born. With A Star is Born, director, actor, co-writer Bradley Cooper may have pulled off one of the most authentic music movies since Spinal Tap. And Lady Gaga, in the role she was born this way to play, sings on the film's potential Oscar nominees, Shallow, I'll Never Love Again, and Always Remember Us This Way. The hit soundtrack, which debuted at number one on the Billboard charts, also features contributions from Jason Isbell, Lucas Nelson, and Mark Ronson. Venom. This year, Oscar winner Eminem, a huge Marvel Comics fan, wrote the title song for that other Marvel movie, Venom. That song is also included on Eminem's latest number one album, Kamikaze. Note the visual shout-out to the Beastie Boys' Licensed to Ill cover art. Additionally, Eminem shot a memorable video for Venom on top of the Empire State Building. Moment Makers. The Carters. In 2002, Jay-Z wanted a singer on his song O3 Bonnie and Clyde and told me, "I knew one who was exceptional. Beyonce can sing anything." A year later, Beyonce returned the compliment. Jay rapped on Crazy in Love, and he added to the energy of it. It really completed the song. This year, the Carters, after solo endeavors with themes that included accusations and apologies about marital infidelity, collaborated on their first full-length album, Everything is Love. Wouldn't it be ironic if after Jay shouted F the Grammys on that album, those awards made up for the previous best album snubs to these two? Drake. Drake's Scorpion album had 1 billion first-week streams, was number one for 5 straight weeks, and is another milestone in his massive body of work. Watch for it to be all about Drake at this year's Grammys. Childish Gambino. When was the last time everyone was talking about a music video? After hosting Saturday Night Live in May, Donald Glover's often shirtless alter ego, Childish Gambino, debuted his provocative video, This Is America, online. A searing commentary on gun violence, racism, and the current political climate in this country, the clip got more than 85 million views in its first week on YouTube and was the most controversial and analyzed video of the year. Ariana Grande. It's no surprise that the artwork is upside down on Ariana Grande's number one album, Sweetener, after the terrorist attack at her 2017 Manchester concert. She's had that kind of year, facing a bunch of highly publicized personal problems. Professionally, Sweetener garnered 3 billion streams and makes her a strong contender in multiple Grammy categories this February. LACMA lights up. The museum and Gucci joined forces for the Art Plus Film Gala, honoring Catherine Opie and Guillermo del Toro by Britt Hinemuth. The most glamorous night of fall in L.A., and Beck knows where it's at. Photographs by Peter Bowler. For actress Kiki Lane, a highlight of the night was an encounter with Gucci's creative director, Alessandro. He said, "I looked like a goddess." In the photos, A$AP Rocky signs Alessandro Borghi's plate. Kiki Lane, the breakout star of Barry Jenkins' film If Beale Street Could Talk, in front of Chris Burden's Urban Light Art installation. Ace Harper, B. Ackerland, and Brooke Candy. Courtney Love and Ari Neff. Director Guillermo del Toro emphasized the healing power of storytelling. "Now more than ever, we need our myths, our fables, our gods, and our demons," he said. "Stories are the most ancient path to empathy." Beyond his service to storytelling, del Toro was praised by his friend Jeffrey Katzenberg for being, by all means, the most huggable. Leonardo DiCaprio and Ava Chow hosted the gala, which raised more than $4.5 million in support of LACMA's film initiatives. After dinner and tributes to the honorees, Beck took the stage, joined by Dave Grohl and St. Vincent, for the evening's Alfresco Grand Finale. Artist Catherine Opie, who has lived in Los Angeles for over 30 years, thanked the city's creative community. "Being part of a society in which human beings are embraced and looked at in relationship to their diversity is utterly important." In the photos, Kim Kardashian West and Kourtney Kardashian. Sheila Azoff speaks with Doug Aitken, Zoe Kravitz, Dakota Johnson, and Guy Osiri. Gala attire, Beck, Rowan Blanchard, Guillermo del Toro and Salma Hayek-Pinault, Catherine Opie with her son Oliver, Leonardo DiCaprio, Vivi Nevo, and Camila Morón, Ava Chow, Alejandro Iñárritu, and Alfonso Cuarón.
Thank you.
folk, and friends. Joni Mitchell was feted by admirers with a tribute concert and dinner soiree to mark her 75th birthday. Photographs by Peter Bowler. Seal delivered a moving rendition of Both Sides Now at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion in L.A. James Taylor, Chaka Khan, Brandi Carlile, and Graham Nash were among those who also serenaded Mitchell with her own songs. It was a rare public appearance for the legendary singer-songwriter who blew out candles on a birthday cake. The concert venue's Grand Hall was transformed into a rustic bohemian oasis that evoked both Mitchell's native Canada and her California cool. In the photos, Diana Krall, Tom Hanks, Rufus Wainwright, John Hamm, Angela Bassett, and Vanity Fair editor Radhika Jones, who hosted the evening with the Music Center of Los Angeles. Seal, Lily Tomlin and Diana Krall, Joni Mitchell, The Dinner Site, Angelica Houston, and Rufus Wainwright.
Thank you.
the Hive Report, a deep dive on a shallow subject. This month, Trumpian historiographers. Only the 45th president could arouse the interest of such a varied cohort of scribes. Michael Wolff, magnum opus, Fire and Fury Inside the Trump White House. Genre, popcorn drama. Fever-spiking allegation, insinuation of Nikki Haley romance. Canonical parallel, the ego and the id. Literary hero, Steve Bannon. Antagonist, Kellyanne Conway. Tragic flaw, accusations of lax reporting ethics. Bob Woodward, magnum opus, Fear. Genre, horror thriller. Fever-spiking allegation, Gary Cohn saved world from nuclear annihilation. Canonical parallel, history of the Byzantine state. Literary hero, Dante Alighieri. Antagonist, Trump bombshell fatigue. Tragic flaw, unadorned prose. Omarosa, magnum opus, unhinged. Genre, workplace comedy. Fever-spiking allegation, Trump used a racial slur. Canonical parallel, Are You There, Vodka? It's Me, Chelsea. Literary hero, Jose Canseco. Antagonist, John Kelly. Tragic flaw, not delivering on the Apprentice tapes. James Comey, magnum opus, A Higher Loyalty. Genre, bodice ripper. Fever-spiking allegation, The President has small hands after all. Canonical parallel, Song of Myself. Literary hero, Reinhold Niebuhr. Antagonist, Injustice. Tragic flaw, extended promotional tour. Jeanine Pirro, magnum opus, Liars, Leakers, and Liberals. Genre, Gothic horror. Fever-spiking allegation, vast left-wing conspiracy. Canonical parallel, the paranoid style in American politics. Literary hero, Ann Coulter. Antagonist, the deep state. Tragic flaw, supporting Dinesh D'Souza. Alan Dershowitz, magnum opus, The Case Against Impeaching Trump. Genre, Harlequin romance. Fever-spiking allegation, Trump can't be impeached. Canonical parallel, The Stranger. Literary hero, Herbert W. Kalmbach. Antagonist, Martha's Vineyard dinner parties. Tragic flaw, post-OJ legal career nihilism.
Thank you.
In the Velvet Sea by Alexis Chung. Generations of cinephiles may associate the song Blue Velvet with director David Lynch's eponymous cult classic, but one of the composers, Bernie Wayne, originally wrote it in 1951 for a beautiful woman he'd glimpsed inside a gilded hotel lobby. Who she was and what form the fabric took remains unknown, but it's conceivable that she chose velvet for the same reason many seek it out these cold, confusing days, to captivate and luxuriate in equal measure. Opening photo illustration by Jimmy Terrell, showing Isabella Rossellini in blue velvet, a look from Gucci's 2019 resort collection, and Gene Wilder as Willy Wonka. And why not? It's a material of superlatives, one that, come the holidays, swathes the otherwise discreet in such immoderate adjectives as sumptuous and splendid. The word itself conjures an array of allusions. The sky at dusk, a lounge singer's husky voice. Amid this season's inclement weather, excess calories, weekday parties, and gaping political unease, and all the attendant hangovers those things bring, velvet is tangible self-care. The cakes named for it are rich, as are the people who first popularized it. Chinese nobility, circa the 5th century BCE, the Italian aristocrats who adopted it as their own. Rulers from the House of Borgia to Henry VIII have bedecked themselves in the material to sit for now-famous paintings. And even our favorite new royal, Meghan Markle, was recently snapped sporting a pair of Uxed Velvet Jimmy Choos. Soft touch for maximum comfort and glam, opt for head-to-toe velvet. And velvet items shown in photos here are a Gucci dress, Moncler jacket, Roger Vivier bag, Todd's sandals, and a Fendi dress. Velvet, as metonym for the upper echelons, is a long-held tradition in literature too, which lends it an elegant gravitas. From Madame Bovary to Anna Karenina, the fabric signifies wealth and a sense of belonging, even when one has neither. In Henri de Balzac's Lost Illusions, Madame de Bargeton seeks a suitable cold-weather going-out outfit and lands on a certain green velvet dress, trimmed fantastically enough. In Gone with the Wind, Scarlett O'Hara masks her poverty with a gown fashioned from velvet drapes. For their best-known portraits, real-life writers Oscar Wilde and Emily Dickinson donned a velvet jacket and a thin velvet neck ribbon, respectively. To paraphrase Wilde, you can never be overdressed or overeducated. More recently, pop culture has enshrined the aesthetics du jour in velvet's timeless opulence. The 1970s saw Gene Wilder as Willy Wonka in his then-on-trend purple frock coat. In 1998, My Date with the President's Daughter gave us Hallie Richman's iconic bubblegum pink dress. And who can forget Angelina Jolie's bare leg at the 2012 Oscars, languidly extending from her velvet Versace gown? This year, designers have tapped into something between au courant and the pomp of velvet past. Moncler presents a puffer in a crushed cherry hue. At Gucci, a plunging noir dress is bound by three bows, and Fendi's studded Swarovski crystals over Prussian blue pleats glint like runway lights on a tarmac after midnight. Intrinsic to velvet is the sense of having wealth, smarts, someone to kiss under the mistletoe, or at least very much hoping to have. In John Singer Sargent's 1883-84 painting, Madame X, the artist captures the fabric's quintessence, a black velvet dress hugging the shapely form of Madame Pierre Gautreau, a notorious 19th-century beauty known for her unruly affairs. In the painting, which caused a public outcry for flaunting indecency, one strap originally slipped from her bare shoulder. Her face angles away from onlookers, placing her velvet dress in full view. Married but not monogamous, anonymous but well-known, on display but off-limits, she seems to have it all, and she's commanding the world's attention. Mark your calendar. From art to music and books to fashion, stay occupied with this season's notable launches and events. Listen to soprano Julia Bullock, this year's artist in residence at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. Performing, Nativity Reconsidered, an intimate reimagination of John Adams' El Niño opera oratorio, which Bullock says emphasizes the essential contributions of women in an otherwise male-centric biblical canon, at the Met Cloisters on December 21st and 22nd. Read Sam Lipsight's new novel, Hark, published by Simon & Schuster. About a comedian-turned-guru and his devoted followers proselytizing in a satirical America scarily similar to our own. One acolyte, depressed about politics, looks for a book that was either about the political situation or not about the political situation at all. Hark is both. Out January 15th. Visit Judy Chicago, A Reckoning, a retrospective of the iconic feminist artist. Take home the T-shirt collaboration between Chicago and event sponsor Max Mara, which couples Chicago's famed bigamyhood sculpture with Max Mara's classic palette. It is to be celebrated, Chicago says, that women artists of color and a variety of gender identifications can now openly be themselves in their work. At ICA Miami, T-shirt also at selected Max Mara stores, launching December 4th. Now, on the Vanity Fair agenda, promotion events. Event: Vanity Fair and Stars celebrate Warriors of Liberty City. Vanity Fair and Stars teamed up to host an advanced screening of Stars' new original docuseries, Warriors of Liberty City, exploring the crime-ridden neighborhood in Miami that is arguably the NFL's largest, most successful football factory. Following the advanced screening of Episode 1, VanityFair.com editor Matthew Lynch moderated a captivating panel discussion with executive producers Luther, Uncle Luke Campbell, Evan Rosenfeld, and Jamal Henderson. The full series is available now on Stars. For the latest news, happenings, photos, and videos, follow at VF Agenda. This program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service and broadcasting from its Raleigh, North Carolina studios. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Both parts A and B are available as a podcast. Opening and closing music by Calexico. Interval selections by Mark Hoffman.